Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you Spaced Out with Bob Bosler. But first, a quick legend of Hercules. Within moments, Hercules Jefferson Brown loses his mother and discovers that he is in truth a son of Zeus. While attempting to subdue his mother's slayer, who happens to be his ex-stepfather, he accidentally kills the man. To redeem himself, he must journey to the underworld and rescue the soul he sent there. He is also given 12 labors to complete, like his namesake of old by Hera. The rewards will be the same as well: redemption, word fame, and immortality. Alas, the series, called Herc Brown, comprised of issues number 0 and number 1, does not continue beyond the first labor. Herc triumphs over the Nemean lion in a dreamlike combat, and we're treated to a glimpse of the mythic forces behind the Hydra that pulls him. There's also a teaser about a god drug coming soon. And now, without further ado, Spaced Out with Bob Bosler. Greetings and welcome, Bob. How are you?
Doing great. And happy to be back, of course, for another journey into a totally different genre that we've never explored before, although probably the closest we came to it was Firefly last year.
Well, I'm here if you need me, and I'm looking forward to your show.
Thank you, Hercules. We'll be looking today at Westerns, the Wild Wild West, and maybe even a little steampunk, but definitely looking into Westerns with my good friend, Beryl Washington, who definitely knows her Westerns on TV, films, and now on various streaming services. She has a lot to tell us. But first, Beryl, how did you become such a fan of this genre?
I don't know. As a little girl, well, you know, when I grew up, that's what was on TV, Westerns. Lots of Westerns.
Yeah, 50s and 60s especially, and really into the early 70s, TV was saturated with Westerns. Many good shows. And from what I understand, they were fairly cheap to produce. We got a lot of good ones over the years, and they endured. Gunsmoke for many years was the longest running show on the air. I think it was 20 or 21 seasons. And, Bonanza was up there too with 14, and Wagon Train was there for a long time. And Death Valley Days had a pretty good run as well.
Yeah, I think the Virginian did
a season. Yeah, the Virginian was long lasting, and as I'm sure you'll go over, was unique in that it was a 90-minute show for part of its run, not all of it. I think they cut back one season to an hour later on. But what I've noticed too about Westerns is, you know, you and I as sci-fi fans, especially being big Star Trek fans, you know, it's always been told that Gene Roddenberry was able to slip through some, you know, important, serious stories with themes to them and morals because it was a sci-fi, genre. But I really, looking at some of the Westerns that I've basically seen for the first time and sometimes watched over again that are on during the day, I've noticed that there was a lot of good serious stories written there too, that had underlying themes of racial tensions and even some gender and some things that dealt with, say, rape and some serious subjects that they were able to kind of go through. And so I think we forget that sometimes. We just tend to think of the action-packed shoot-em-ups and stuff like that. But there were a lot of good, stories, and some of them had to be compacted into half-hour installments because many early Westerns were only 30 minutes long.
Right. If you want to just take a good parental theme, you can go with the Rifleman, who was one of the dads ever. I mean, you know, if you look at how he treated his son and the relationship that they had and how this, and actually that, you know, that kid grew up on that show. But, I mean, I'm dad, and this is what I got to say, but he always explained things to him. He never left him, you know, standing in the wind trying to figure out, well, what is he talking about? He made himself clear. There was a couple episodes where he kind of, you know, bit his head off, but he came back and dad apologized and said, this is what's going on. But they had the greatest father-son relationship ever, you know?
Oh, they did. They did. It was a wonderful casting. And, you know, it was such a good, you know, chemistry there. My only regret with the Rifleman was that the show, I think, should have lasted, another season or so. And I know that they were hinting, I think the last season they brought in the spunky Irish shop owner. Was she a shop owner? I don't think she owned the tavern.
Yeah, she owned the hotel and like a restaurant attached to it.
Yeah, and certainly they were hinting that that they would be getting married, and I was always hoping that they would do at least a conclusion episode, you know, where that happened, you know, for the happily ever after. But I'm sure, you know, and unfortunately we never saw a reunion, you know, for that. Back then they really didn't do, you know, reunion shows, but it would have been nice to see that.
Yeah. But when you were talking about Westerns and how they have a tendency to stretch out, oh my goodness, gosh, I lost it. But I'll go on with something else. But you probably remember it, the one where it had all the young guys and they were the Young Riders, where they were Pony Express.
Yeah.
They did the mail, and that was a very diverse group of people.
Yes.
You had everybody. You had one. In fact, you even had one guy who was deaf, who couldn't talk, and he did, you know, hand signs and what have you.
Yeah.
And you didn't really see that, you know, normally. Wow, look how long it took Marvel to get it. I mean, the Eternals had a woman who actually in real life was deaf. But here you have Pony Express riders, and you have an African American, you have Native American, you have one guy who has a handicap, and you know, they made that all work.
it's amazing genre to see stories in. I think. I didn't really grow up so much with Westerns, although I recall as a kid, you know, catching them every so often and actually collecting toys like the Marx, Johnny West. They had these large 12-inch dolls that were, you know, Westerns and stuff like that. And I remember my aunt and uncle bringing me to the movie Chisholm. I was probably too young to watch that, you know, with the John Wayne, but I still remember him up on the hill with the white horse and, you know, and things like, but I think I really gained an appreciation only within the last 10 years or maybe less when I started to catch some channels that were really devoted, had a lot of their programming, everything from Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman to Guns of Paradise to the old classics of Gunsmoke and Bonanza I had caught every so often, but, you know, really went through the entire run. Rifleman, of course. There was a show, Wells Fargo. I was surprised how many half-hour shows there were. You know, I think Rawhide was a full hour. But a lot of there was Bowie, you know, named after the Bowie knife. I think it was based on the actual, you know, a real life character. But, you know, and of course, what's his name? O'Brien, who played Wyatt Earp, which, of course, was a more sanitized version of Wyatt Earp. But,
Yeah. a good guy, Wyatt Earp, whereas if you really look into the history of it, Wyatt Earp wasn't that good of a guy.
No, he was not.
But and they also had trilogies where they had on Sundays. Well, they had two different ones. There was a trilogy that involved law, it was a lawyer trilogy, but there was also a Western trilogy. You see Cheyenne, but believe it or not, it was Cheyenne, Bronco Lane, and Sugarfoot. And they came on, it came on alternate Sundays, I believe it was, and they were all hour long. And every once in a while in a Cheyenne episode, you'll actually see the two guys that were in the other two. For instance, Ty Harden was Bronco Lane, and Will Hutchins was Chicken. But they all had their own theories. They just, you know, like every other Sunday, you would see one or the other.
Oh, that's cool. Like the old NBC mystery movie, but with Westerns.
Right, exactly.
But I was always a big fan of Lone Ranger, which I know was aimed at more of a more younger audience when it was done at the time. But boy, they made a good number. I mean, we think of episode runs as being, you know, per season being like 24, maybe 26, you know, in the 70s, because they cut back from the 60s. But back then, they really went long for their seasons. And shows like Uncle Long Cassidy.
You were either going to watch a Western or you were going to watch a detective show, because that's pretty what you had. You know, detectives are, there you were, you know, very few things, or some comedy type thing, you know, but maybe a variety show thrown in here and there. But for the most part, that's what it was. It was, you know, it wasn't like all the science fiction that they have, like science fiction shows and fantasies and all that stuff that they have now, or which came in at a later date. At one point in time, this is it. So this is what you were watching.
Yeah.
And, even, and you know, and even in movie theaters, they were producing westerns.
Yeah, and we had the creation of what was called the spaghetti westerns, which I believe that name comes from, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe most of them were shot in Italy. And Clint Eastwood did many of those and a number of other people because they were cheap, you know, as far as locations and stuff like that. The producers were able to shoot them pretty quick and I guess less expensive than California. I don't know why, but it was.
And well, it's like now everything is shot in Canada because it's so much cheaper. But the spaghetti westerns, I mean, you could shoot them and you can make them quickly because let's face it, they weren't deep. They weren't that deep, you know.
Right.
There was bad guys and then bad guys. There was the good guy was the townspeople who had no idea who the other folks were, because you had you had Clint, who was a bad guy, and then you had that other guy who was worse. That's all, you know.
The Magnificent Seven, you know, which I know you've got a lot of information on. You know, I think that was certainly evident that, you know, you definitely had the big villain who you couldn't wait to see shot up. You know, you couldn't wait to see their comeuppance, you know.
Right. I was a huge fan of the Magnificent Seven. I liked the first two as they went on to, you know, the others. I mean, I watched them, but they weren't to me as exciting as, because it was here's a group of men and then you had to find them and they were all kind of all over the place, you know.
One of the later ones I was surprised had Pa Walton, Ralph Waite, you know, in it.
Yeah. You weren't sure who you were going to kind of get, you know. Yul Brynner was very commanding, you know. Steve McQueen was in his thing at the time, which is probably why the two of them didn't get along, because you got two alpha males sitting here and that wasn't going on. And I kind of think Yul thought a whole lot of himself. So, but I liked the two characters, but I liked a nice thrower, probably better because he was quiet. And I hated the fact that almost everybody died, but, you know, that's, I guess that's how it goes, you know, in protecting these folks. But that kind of irritated me. I was like, well, wow. I knew somebody was going to have to die, but I was like, all of them? Oh, come on. Well, 4 out of 7, because I think the young guy stayed, too, you know, because he fell in love, but... you know, I was like, oh, Charles Bronson died because the kids wouldn't leave him alone, you know. And he had a soft heart, got himself wiped out, you know. James Coburn, who I thought was really cool in that movie, with his, you know, he was quiet, knife throwing, you know. That, but, you know, he too died. I was like, oh, awful, you know.
And James Coburn would constantly show up in some of the early Westerns, and usually he, you know, usually he was a bad guy. And he is, you know, he always came off as a pretty scary guy, not somebody you'd want to, you know, mess with. He was probably a really nice guy in real life, but,
yeah,
you know.
But not in the Westerns, he wasn't. He was a scary guy. And, but
Charles
Bronson were really
was
good.
That too.
And I was really surprised, like, when they came out, you know, when they decided to do a remake, I thought, how is that going to work? But I personally thoroughly enjoyed it for a lot of reasons. First of all, who doesn't like Denzel Washington? But
Chris Pratt, you know, it was, you know, amazing.
Yeah, Ethan Hawke. I mean, I like the way they blended the characters, and you can see their relationship to the original one, for instance, you know, like Goodnight Robichaux, who was a sniper, really, but he had done much that he was pretty much having PTSD at this point, and he was scared to shoot, you know. I mean, when he finally got around to it, he was all that, but he was scared to shoot, which is why he had Billy Rocks with him, although he rescued Billy Rocks, and now Billy Rocks is now rescuing him because he knows, you know, that Goodnight's got some issues, but and what he's got is his everybody's scared to death of him. You know, like the one guy ended up giving him money because he betted against him or whatever. And then when he found out it was Goodnight Robichaux, he was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry." But would have way because he was too scared to shoot his own gun at this point, you know. But and Billy Rocks is like the James Coburn because he's deadly with the knives. In fact, one of the best things in the movies is when he tackles that one guy that's standing up on the steps and he cut him every way but loose. You know, I was like, you might want to see the guy alone, you know. And then they had Emmanuel Garcia, who is, you know, Mexican, and who is Mexican by birth, to do his thing. He was cool. Chris Pratt, which is crazy. I thought he was so funny.
Yeah.
And, of course, my favorite is Martin Fessenier, who played Red Harvest, a Comanche Indian who actually is not Comanche, but he's a Yucatan Alaskan native indigenous person. I was like, ooh, look at that, you know. I was like, okay. So they just took all the characters and just totally made them diverse as they could be. And I thought, well, this is so cool. And they all... you know, they just all kind of worked out. They didn't kill as many this time. We got 3 lives, thank goodness. But it was awesome. I really didn't want to see Chris Pratt die, but I was like, but the way he did it was quite cool, I think, you know, because considering, you know, how he would act sometimes. But I was like, wow, he just gave it up to save folks. That's, you know, take that gun out.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, and then... You know, I mean, there were some parts in it that was so cool. I mean, like, Red Harvest, he was hitting everything that he was aiming that arrow at. I was like, oh, my God, look at this guy go, you know, and all of that. But, and I hated to see the two of them die, you know, Robichaux and Billy Rocks, but Gunn took them out. So, you know, but I thought it was a really good remake.
I did too. And not all remakes do well, especially within the Western genre. I don't know how I feel about True Grit, because, you know, it's hard to it's hard to top a John Wayne, you know, Western, but I think they did the best they could with True Grit. It wasn't a bad movie, but it wasn't quite the original.
It's,
you know,
I don't know. Characters are such, you know, that sometimes you can't top the characters is what happens.
Yeah.
Where I think that the remake of Magnificent Seven, I think Denzel was just as cool as Yul Brynner in a much calmer kind of way. You know, so sometimes, you know, you just can't overdo the characters. It's funny because, like, right now on the TV, I've got Open Range, which is Robert Duvall, Kevin Costner.
Oh, wow. Kind of that's a great.
Yeah. It's actually on. I was like, oh, my goodness. And I don't know why. Every time it comes on, I watch it. Like, I don't know the dialogue, okay, because I do. But, another one that I was thinking about, too, was when they did, like, I remember when they came out with and everybody was talking about it the next day after they saw it, but nobody was talking about Wyatt Earp so much as they were talking about Doc Holliday, because Val Kilmer just took that movie and ran with it.
Yeah.
And said, you know, I'm your Huckleberry. And I mean, that was like the line that everybody was quoting for like ever, you know. And as much as I like to play Johnny Ringo, he didn't want any parts of Doc Holliday. with the iconic cup scene when they're in the bar and Johnny Ringo pulls his gun and does all that twirling. Doc Holliday or Val Kilmer does the same thing with a cup. He just clowned me with a cup. Okay, I see where this is going. That movie was great, but Val Kilmer stole it. He just stole it right out from under. And there were some good guy people in it. I mean, like, you know, Sam Elliott, Michael Rooker, who you see a lot, Billy Bob Thornton, you know.
Yes.
Harry Keaton does a lot of stuff, Powers Booth. And even an uncredited Charlton Heston. How about that?
Wow. Jeez. You know, you mentioned Sam Elliott. I mean, I think Sam Elliott has kind of inherited the patriarch, you know, the senior figure of the Westerns these days. I've been watching him in 1883. And he shows up. He looks the same, even in something like Ghost Rider, which I know isn't technically a Western, but he was, you know, the original Ghost Rider. Yeah.
Right.
And he's wearing the same thing. He's wearing the same hat and everything.
He was the Western part of Ghost Rider because he was a cowboy when he was. Sam Elliott looks like a cowboy to you. You just don't expect him to do anything else except get on a horse at some point, you know.
Exactly.
But he doesn't like that the latest what's that new movie out with Benjamin Cumberbatch? He hates that movie. The one with the dog, the sound of the dog or something.
He's kind of an authority in that, so I'd almost want to take his advice. You know, he seems to be like he's inherited the reign of, you know, of a John Wayne or a I don't know who would be in between that comparison, but or James Arness, you know.
To me, a Western figure. I just, when I hear the name Sam Elliott, I'm expecting this is going to be a Western. I mean,
yes.
I don't know if that's good look in Hollywood, because then they don't make a lot of Western, so how much work is Sam getting? But, you know, you just hear it. You say, okay, Western coming, you know. Western coming. Another one that I like, I think what it is, you know, we get without movies on the big screen for so long that you almost got shocked when they put one out there. But when they put out Silverado, that was like a 1985, but I was like, ooh, we got a Western. Let's, you know, what's going on? It had a good cast because it had, you know, Kevin Kline, Kevin Costner, who was a baby at that time practically, Danny Glover. You know, and then they had what we call in the hood old heads like Cheb Woolley. That's all you ever seen Cheb Woolley in was a Western. You know, Pepe Serna was another guy who was in a lot of Westerns, and he showed up in that one as well. Linda Hunt was in it, matter of fact.
Jeff
Fahey, Jeff Goldblum, Brian Dennehy shows up, you know, bad guy, but he makes a good bad guy. And there were some iconic quotes in that, when Kevin Klein and Scott Glenn are leaving this one town that they had pretty much thrown Danny Glover out because he was, you know, he was an African-American, and, you know, we don't serve you here was basically the thing. So he left, and then when Scott Glenn broke Kevin Costner out of jail, who was his brother, the three of them had to leave, and the sheriff's chasing them, and they get to a point, and all of a sudden, you know, there's gunshots and rifle shots, actually, and there's, you know, a twig is broken here and a stone's hot there. And then the sheriff's had his shot off and he stops. And the posse says, well, come on, this is your territory. We're going. He goes, no, not today. My territory ends here. And they're like, what are you talking about? He hasn't hit anything. He goes, he hit everything he aimed at. You know, he was like, I'm not going further than this, you know. And then later in the movie, Glenn gets beat up by the Brian Dennehy's bad guys, and they know he didn't have any bullets left in his gun, and they're beating him all up, and Danny Glover appears, and he tells the guys, you know, drop your guns, back off of him, and they're just looking at him. He goes, I don't want to shoot you, and you don't want to be dead. And one guy just didn't want to pay him any attention, and he got shot dead. Because he had that Henry rifle, and you didn't trifle with a Henry rifle, you know. And most people didn't know how to shoot them. The only people in the thing was his dad and him. Both had Henry rifles, and apparently you had to be kind of good at shooting a Henry rifle back in the day. And he said, "I don't want to shoot you, and you don't want to be dead. So I suggest you leave him to walk." And I was like, "Okay, I think he made his point," but. You know, yeah, that was, he had, you know, like a classic line. Kevin Klein was hilarious. I mean, it wasn't like he was being comical, but, you know, when he gets found, he's just in his underwear per se. So now he's riding around, you know, a horse that Scott Glenn brought with him in his underwear. And then he sees his horse. He runs in trying to buy a gun, you know, so he can get his horse back. When he finally gets his horse, but then they go to another place, and there's a saloon, and he goes in, and this guy's got on his hat and his pearl-handled guns, and he ain't feeling it, you know what I'm saying? And the first part of it is him just trying to get his clothes back.
Kevin Klein is somebody who's so multi-talented. I mean, I know a lot of people had some problems with the big movie version of Wild Wild West, but definitely him playing Artemis Gordon was definitely a comical point, because he was really good in that, playing that part.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it's so erotic. He was so straight-faced. I mean, he was just, you know, he walked into the bar. He loved the bar, good bar, you know, good saloon. And he saw his hat, and he figured if the guy had his hat, clearly had his gun, and he walked over and he goes, I know that's not my hat you're wearing, and those aren't my pearl-handled guns, you know. And he had this old beat-up gun that he paid like $5 for. He wasn't even sure that the thing was going to work, you know. But he wanted his hat and his gun back, and I was like, oh my God, this guy's going from town to town picking up his stuff as he goes along, you know. But he gets it, you know, and ultimately he runs into Brian Dennehy, who happens to be someone he used to run with, but now is on the other side of the – well, he was on the other side of the fence then, but now they're not even friends anymore. So it gets to be interesting to see where that's going, and that's not even the main storyline, because the main storyline revolves around Scott Glenn, who did time for pissing off this other guy. You know, like, wow. I was so happy. And they did that iconic scene where, you know, they're riding and you see – Glover and Klein and Glenn and Costner, and they're all riding their horses, and they all come up off of a ridge, you know, and there's a big scene, all the open space and the music. I was like, okay, they just went back and dipped into the way back in the day Western. I like it, you know.
Yeah, and I think there's so much room for that still in today's. We don't see too many Westerns on TV, unfortunately, anymore. And I thought something that was going to reignite the Western was several years ago with Hell on Wheels, with our own beloved Colm Meaney and now Anson Mount, who will be, you know, is playing Captain Pike. And I had forgotten about Captain Pike, you know, having a horse. And apparently, you know, we're going off a little topic here, but in May, when we see the first episode of Strange New Worlds, he's going to be riding, and I forgot the name of his horse, Tango. He's going to be riding his horse. So, in one of the opening scenes, they had a teaser. So I was kind of glad to see that. But Hell on Wheels was clearly, you know, something different. It was very serious and gritty and emotional, you know.
That was a good one. And when they did Deadwood, that was good as well.
Deadwood was awesome.
Now, and that town really did exist. So a lot of what they were doing there was real. I mean, the town did exist, you know, and the town of Deadwood. And those are two good Westerns. And I was thinking, ooh, we got a shot here. Somebody's gonna do, you know, some Westerns. You know what else was good was when I think it was Showtime did Magnificent Seven, the series.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Michael played Chris.
Hmm.
And that was,
and then you
and
had
that,
the young ones. Yeah.
Was Chris, what's his name? The guy who was a beauty, Ron Perlman. He was also one of the characters. Yeah, that and that was a good series. I mean, I enjoyed it anyway. The only difference was that they weren't they didn't go out to necessarily rescue some folks. They ended up staying in this one town, kind of putting it back together. But then they kind of did other things that were going on. Things where people would come into the town and try to cut up, and they would have to deal with these seven guys, you know, and figure out how they're going to work it out. And it ran for, I think, one or two seasons. It was pretty decent.
Well, it's interesting to see some of the older characters when they bring them back, like, you know, James Garner in Maverick, the original Maverick, as opposed to the Brett Maverick show that was done, I think, in the 80s or early 90s. I'm not sure. You know, where he gets more settled, where he's like, you know, where the format of the show has changed and he's changed, and that seems to make sense. I don't know if you were a fan of either of those shows, but
yeah, in fact, of the brothers, I like Brett best.
Yeah,
I didn't care for the whole Maverick series when they start dragging in cousins and, you know, and Bart was bad, but I really like Brett better. You know, I just like James Garner better than I like the other guy. And then they brought in, well, who was the other one? He was a cousin or something.
Roger Moore, the British. They brought him in, and he was there for a season or two, and then they brought someone else in towards the end. I think that one was, and I don't remember who was who, because originally it was James Garner, Brett, and then they brought in his brother, and they would rotate
Bart.
Them. Rarely were they together in an episode. They did every so often, but it was to have a crossover, it was rare. They'd rotate them. And then I think it was the third or fourth season where James Garner had a dispute of salary with the producers, and it couldn't get settled, and he walked. And then they brought in, they rotated Bart with Roger Moore.
Yeah.
And
that's about how I like it.
And I think there was one more person, either a brother or another cousin or something, and towards the very end. And it had an interesting history. And then it came back. It had a TV. I think before it went to the big screen, because there was a version on the big screen, but there was a TV version where they brought in young Maverick, his son or something.
Oh, wow.
And it was interesting. It was a pilot movie in the show, and I read about this, and James Garner was in it, but he rode off, and the camera followed the young guy to a town or something for basically the news stories. And the reviewer wrote it very interesting, said, I think the camera followed the wrong Maverick, you know, because clearly what they wanted yeah. James Garner. Yeah. But and then James Garner did come back, like, I don't know, 10 years later or something like that, or maybe less, for his own show, Brett Maverick.
Earlier we were talking about people that you – I was telling you about people that they weren't always just Westerns, but they did a lot of them. And I mentioned L.T. Jones to you.
Yes.
You didn't remember him, but do you remember The Mask of Zorro?
Yes. Yes.
Remember Three-Finger Jack? That is L.Q. Jones.
Oh, my gosh.
That's an older L.Q. Jones, but that's L.Q. Jones. He did, like, 25 episodes of The Virginian. He had reoccurring, you know, in it. He was in Wagon Train. He was in a lot of Westerns in the Mask of Zorro. He's still alive. I don't know, 81, 90, somewhere. But
well,
I think the actor
who plays Cheyenne is also alive. He's amazing.
Who's that?
The actor, and I can't think of his name, but the actor who played Cheyenne in... And it has such a dopey theme. They didn't just call it Cheyenne. It was, when they introduce it, they use the original CBS announcement. It says, The Cheyenne Show, Cheyenne Show.
I know. really?
Yeah.
No,
it had no actual cast. It was just him because he would move from downtown and there was no supporting cast, really. It was just basically him. So.
Yeah, like there was, I mean, L.Q. Jones did two episodes of Cheyenne and then, you know, that was that and moved on and, Clint Walker is the guy that played Cheyenne.
Clint Walker.
They always say he's a big guy.
He was.
They say he's a big one. That was their favorite line. But another actor who has been around, well, he passed away now, but who did a lot of Westerns was Paul Fix.
Oh, yeah.
He did a lot of Westerns. He was, you name it, he was in it. Wagon Train, Gunsmoke. Daniel Boone, Big Valley, High Chaparral, and he was in Star Trek.
Yes.
He was in the episode where No Man Has Gone Before. He played Dr. Piper.
Yes. And it would have been interesting if he had stuck around. And also in The Cage and Menagerie, that first doctor who played, is it John Hoyt, who played Dr. Boyce? He was in a heck of a lot of Westerns, too, and a lot of other things as well, like Twilight Zone. He was the three-armed guy in one of the classic Twilight Zone episodes. He played the Martian or, You know what I thought was funny was to see Frank DeCava, best known as Chief Wild Eagle in the F-Troop, playing an actual, you know, playing another Indian chief character, but then I couldn't take him seriously. He was in, Wagon Train or it was a black and white Western, and I was like, that's Chief Wild Eagle, you know.
Just to stay on that Star Trek side, Leonard Nimoy, mm-hmm. who, by the way, is Ukrainian, just to let you know. But he did Broken Arrow. He was an Apache. He did Cimarron mm-hmm. City, Colt 45. He was in Tombstone Territory, The Outlaws, Bonanza, He did Rawhide, Laramie, Wagon Train, Virginia, Death Valley Days. Who is a really cool show because everything in Death Valley Days is a true story that happened out west someplace. Wagon Train. He did some Gunsmoke, you know, and he played Native American in Gunsmoke as well.
Yeah.
He was a bad guy. Couple episodes, and he played bad guys really well because he played with what was it, Robert Vaughn, and they were brothers and they were sheriffs, but they were both bad. They were just bad guys. Shatner did a bunch. He did Big Valley, Outlaws, Gunsmoke, Virginian. Seldom was he a good guy either. He was in Kung Fu.
Yes. And then he did his own Western. In the 70s, after Star Trek, he had Barbary Coast, which it was only one season, but it still plays out on MeTV or Antenna TV or one of those. And what's interesting about that is that another Western alumni, you know, who played, we were just talking about him earlier tonight, you know, Doug McClure, Trampas, you know, he basically, Barbary Coast was kind of a remake of Wild Wild West, because with Shatner basically playing the, the Artemis Gordon character. He was the disguise. He would always be in disguises, and it was a cute show, but it was set in a particular town. I think it was, I don't want to say New Orleans, but it was, you know, well, it was Barbary Coast, duh, you know. Yeah. So. But yeah, they didn't move to. Oh, and Richard Kiel was in that. Who was also in the original Wild. You know, it was kind of funny, but he played a good guy in Barbary Coast. But he was Dr. Lovelace's assistant or you know, thug in at least one or two episodes of the original Wild Wild West. Which also has a connection to Star Trek, you know, because, you know.
Yeah. And when you mention Doug McClure, the Trampas was my favorite character.
Yes.
And Doug McClure and James Drury were the best of friends. And Drury said that Doug McClure was the same guy that you saw on the set. He always had a smile. He was always friendly. You know, and just ongoing and what have you. Crazy thing is that there were so many, Shiloh really wasn't nowhere near Medicine Bow. Shiloh was actually a back lot for Universal.
Oh.
And it was filmed in Six Point, Texas, which ain't hardly Wyoming. But, Lee J. Cobb was one of the characters, and he just up and quit. He thought the show was terrible. That's why he was no longer in it.
Oh.
And, you know, so then you get John McIntyre, later on. The last guy to be in it was Stuart Granger, but when he was like the last season, but he wanted everything to change and revolve around him. Drury had to remind him the show is called The Virginian. has nothing to do with you, buddy, you know. So needless to say, Stuart Granger, and Drury said, I couldn't stand him. I just couldn't stand him. You know, you know, he just wanted it all to change. Interesting thing, and John McIntyre was one of the, you know, owners too. And he has a very strange, I don't know, I guess it's kind of an eerie, creepy kind of thing going on. But, you know, Ward Vaughn was Wagon Train, and he was a Wagon Train master. And then then Lee J. Cobb became the Wagon Train master. Both of them died, and John McIntyre replaced them. He replaced two people that died, because Lee J. Cobb died, and he replaced him. He also replaced Ward Vaughn. I was like, boy, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah. Jeez.
People die off and you're replacing them. But they said, you know, but Lee J. Cobb could not stand he couldn't stand the show, you know, so he just wanted to quit. But I was like, oh, that's terrible, you know. That's really terrible.
Well,
but,
you know, you talk about some of the frictions, in, you know, and there's always friction in any workplace, and certainly Hollywood with its big egos, you know, is no exception. But I recall another Star Trek alumni, and I got this directly from him years ago at Shore Leave, our beloved Apollo from Who Mourns Adonis, you know, Michael Forrest talked to us. We had him at Shore Leave at a breakfast, and he shared with us a story about how he did it. He was doing a Western, and maybe you remember the Western, because he didn't actually mention, he couldn't remember himself what it was, either a film or a TV episode. I would think it was a film, because Brian Keith, he said he had a fight scene with Brian Keith, and Brian Keith got a little too overzealous and actually punched him and knocked him down. And Michael Forrest was not really happy about that, because he thought that Brian Keith kind of was just maybe not did it deliberately, but was a little careless in his and they almost came to blows.
Wow.
So, you know, it left a whole feeling that, you know, that maybe things weren't, you know, that maybe Brian Keith was a little, you know, full of himself or maybe just was having an off day or, you know, but I don't remember ever seeing I saw Michael Forrest in a lot of things, and he played, he would play an Indian. He would play, you know, a cowboy. He would play, you know, but I don't remember seeing Brian Keith, you know, in any Western TV. So I'm thinking it's a movie. I don't know.
Yeah, it might have been. I don't remember that. You know, and it was so comical to watch them sometimes, and you see, you know, Native Americans, and you're looking at this person going, yeah, no. You know, and then one guy, well, the guy that I was telling you about, Michael Sesmester, who played Red Harvest, he's done a lot of, in fact, he's on Yellowstone. He plays a, I forget the tribe, but anyway, he's a Native American on Yellowstone. But Last of the Mohicans was a good movie when they came out with that.
Yeah.
And
that was another good one.
I thoroughly enjoyed that. And, you know, it's funny because every time I see Wes Studi, he's always being a bad man. He's a bad, I mean, you know, he's going to play a Native American. He's always going to be bad. But you know who else was, people don't think about it. Now, I used to read his books. Thought anything about him until I saw him, Graham Greene. And he's Native American as well.
I didn't know that. I know.
Yeah. And and he wrote great, great books, and they had nothing to do with Westerns at all. You know. And then all of a sudden he started showing up in you know, in movies, and I was like, oh my goodness, you know. And he's in the one with Kevin Costner, Dancing with Wolves.
Okay.
Graham Greene is in that.
Wow. Wow.
Yep. And I was like, okay. And then I've seen him in some other things, and you know, and he's you know, true to the Native American heritage, so he's playing that. But I was like, oh, wow. But and then you'll see Wes Studi in a bunch of them, and he's playing Native Americans, which makes you, you know, feel good that, all right, everybody is where they should be. Okay, it's not some person all browned out trying to be something that they are not. As soon as you start looking at their facial features, like, no, you know, you're going to have a hard time getting all that paint off your face later today.
And then you have, like, Ricardo Montalban, who could play Spaniards, and he could play, he's played Indians, he's played Indians.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, you know, but I did happen to see, this was not a Western, but I only saw it last night when I was flipping through channels, and it was one of the classic movies stations, and this is the one I have to draw the line on. Ricardo Montalban was playing an Asian character. I don't remember. It was only on last night, and I can't think of the name, but it was like... Do you remember that?
Him. No, you would think his accent would betray him from be playing anyone Asian.
Yes, and it did. It kind of did. He had I was just flipping through channels, and I was like, wait a minute, that's Ricardo Montalban. You know, like they did the opposite of darkening the skin. They bleached. He looked like it was like a vampire. It was like ridiculous. And it was like, oh my God, how much did they pay Ricardo Montalban to do this? And it must have been from like the 50s. It was a very early movie. It was in color, so early 60s, late 50s, something like that. And I was like, oh, this is the one thing that I don't think worked for Ricardo Montalban.
No. I mean, just sometimes they just like overdid it. But there's, you know, I guess what's cool is that we have a Western channel now, so you can see Laramie and Tales of Wells Fargo and Rifleman, and they're all just coming on. And Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke is on two channels. If you got any kind of cable, it's on two different networks, twice a day and into late night. They had it was interesting to see Burt Reynolds, and he's playing a Native American, you know, Quinn Asper.
Yeah. Broken Arrow, right? Was that the Broken Arrow, or
no?
That
was that? That was Gunsmoke.
Or that was Michael Antara.
Quinn Asper. He was on Gunsmoke.
Okay. Oh, that's right. But I thought he also played an Indian. May have been mistaken.
Yep. He did 50 episodes, as a matter of fact. There was 605 episodes or something like that, or 600. No, there were 69 episodes, and I think Amanda Blake did 605, but she did not like. They changed the last few seasons or whatever. They changed directors, and she didn't like the guy, so she left the show. The reason that Doc left the show is because he had a heart attack, and he needed surgery, and that took him out of it, you know. But other than that, he would have hung around, I'm sure. But, you know, it was just, but you can still see them, you know. I mean, like, Gunsmoke, it's on two different networks. Cheyenne's on, Cheyenne's on two different networks now. Death Valley Days is on there with the 20 Mule Team. Borax always cracks me up when I see that. and you get the Rifleman, you get a Wagon Train still rolling.
Yeah, earlier, I've been watching too. 4 o'clock on I think it's MeTV, and they're running the really early ones now, the ones that I don't think I've ever seen before, because I usually caught the later ones that still has Ward Bond and the other guy that was the scout. Those were really well written. The Wagon Train. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, they're still rolling. I think earlier in the day you can catch Rawhide. That's still on.
Yeah. So that's on in the morning with Clint Eastwood, and I remember seeing that they're just starting to repeat them. I think they're in like season two now, but I remember that I had to go look it up and find out when they just had Clint Eastwood take over as the lead, like what happened to the other guy who was there from the beginning. And that was also a financial thing. He wanted a little bit more money, and they were, I think it was a CBS show. But whatever network, they were struggling to keep that show going. So they needed to cut costs, and they decided, well, we're just going to bring up this young guy, you know, Clint Eastwood, not knowing he would go on to be a, you know.
And then there was the iconic Have Gun, Will Trap.
Yes, that's also early in the, you know, in the day, Richard Boone. And that was also very well written, very well done, and a half hour, but they packed so much into a half hour show.
And you know, it takes the stigma off of, because he wore all black, you know, and he usually the bad guy, Mr. Black, but he wasn't a bad guy.
Well, you know, that was his working outfit. You ever see him when he's in, I guess, San Francisco with his agent?
He was suited up.
Yeah, and he's all like gussied up and kind of, you know, he does not look like he would be dangerous at all. You know?
I know. He was a ladies' man and all that kind of good stuff. But when he had to go handle his business, he put on the black, you know, but he wasn't a bad guy. That's the thing. And they used to always say, you know, guys wear black, but not necessarily. Neither did Hopalong Cassidy, who was way back in the day. But he wore all black.
I was just going to mention
that. How do I remember? Because my grandmother bought me a Hopalong Cassidy bike. I was too little to even ride it.
Well, that's funny you should mention that. I didn't get a bike, but my aunt or some relative bought me a Hopalong Cassidy watch that would have, I don't know, a little wagon train or a horse that was in the arms, and it would make a little bell ringing thing. And I never knew who Hopalong Cassidy was. And, of course, my parents would say, well, he was a cowboy, blah, blah, blah. But he was never on TV. I only got to see Hopalong Cassidy only in the last 5-6 years when it was on the, I don't know, the Inspiration Channel or whatever it was called, which also had Roy Rogers, Lone Ranger. Oops, we're running out of time here, but I think Herc's trying to get on here.
Okay.
I was going to come on in another minute.
Okay. But yeah, Hopalong Cassidy. I finally got to figure out who he was, watched the episodes. And he had this quietness about him, but he could be as tough as nails.
He rode a white horse. He rode all black. And my grandma bought me the bike, and the bike came with the six shooter, which my dad was captain. Scared me half to death. So you know.
Well, I do remember as a kid playing cowboy. I had the little kerchief, and I had a straw cowboy hat, you know, that I think I won on the boardwalk at one of the stands, that I had the, you know, back then you could have like a cap gun and a holster and, you know. I think it was because I was playing cowboy that I had to watch cowboy movies to, you know, to use my imagination.
Well, right now I have me a very sharp black cowboy hat with the silver little studs going around it that I got from Texas, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm already, along with my cowboy boots that I got from Texas as well. So, you know, I'm ready.
If we were on screen tonight, I was prepared with my rodeo cowboy shirt that I went to the actual rodeo in New York City. Years ago, I couldn't find the cowboy hat.
I would love to own a cutting horse. Those are the ones, you know, in the rodeo that stop that cow dead, and the horse doesn't move until that guy's got that cow all tied up and roped. Yes, that's a smart horse. Krampus rode.
We have a minute left. If you guys want to share your contact information, this would be a good time.
Okay.
Go ahead, Beryl.
Okay, well, I'm Beryl Belcher. I'm with the USS Sovereign. It's a Star Trek group, and we like anime and what have you. We're 32 years old, been around a long time. And you can find us on Facebook. Okay, I'm sorry. Facebook, USS Sovereign. We're out of Philadelphia.
Thank you. And Bob?
USSChallenger.org, Facebook page, USS Challenger. And you know what, Beryl? I think I accidentally used your maiden name when I introduced you. I apologize, but I've known you longer as Washington than Belcher. So
fine. I use them both.
I know. Thanks so much
Thank
for
you.
Being on the show tonight. We'll revisit
Thank
this
you.
Sometime in the future.
Thank you for sharing your passion for Westerns. The show will be available on demand for those who missed it live in like maybe 10, 15 minutes.
Cool. Thank you.
Okay. Be well, take care, and thanks again.
Thank you, too. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.